The right way to start your day. This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Is this a thing that y'all do where you just pee outside?
Yes. Saving water. Conserving water.
What do you mean saving water?
And it's
water?
Good for the
you're
soil.
Not flushing?
Yeah.
Well, I was in the locker room showering, and I had to go, so.
There we go.
So I would say, on average, I zizzle, I don't know, 8 times a day. 4 are outside.
What?
If you're sitting on the couch, will you go, I gotta go pee and walk out the back door?
Or the front door.
Anyway, I think the guy in the shower opposite saw me. Gave me a dirty look.
You went in the shower.
Yeah, so what? I'm not the only one.
Huh. The front door?
I got big arborvitaes right in front, and I hide behind those.
Could it be because you don't want him to know that you have a friend who pees in the shower?
Oh,
I think it is.
That's exactly what it is.
Why couldn't you just wait?
I was there. I saw a drain.
Since when is a drain a toilet?
It's all pipes. What's the difference?
Broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studios at The Avenue with Gabe Neitzel and Mark Chamora. Here's Jen Latta.
Running her mouth, she wants to ride it. She's trying to hide it. I'm cool as ever, she's too excited. Her man look like he wanna fight. He ain't doing nothing but running his mouth. Talk about it, we all about it. They making plans, we sit and count. Our chair is stacking just like a mountain. You heard about it, she running her mouth. She
wanted to get to this yesterday, and then the bucket of suck occurred with the Green Bay Packers. So as you guys know, Friday was Halloween, and I'm out of town. I'm not there. Don't even ask me where I was. Somebody just asked me this morning, where were you this weekend? And I was like,
weren't you in Utah?
Thank you, Gabe. Yes, I was in Utah, but I couldn't remember that. I was like,
because you had to go to Utah twice last week.
Not to quote Bill Belichick here, but I'm on to
Lubbock.
Thank you again. Yes. Think for a moment. Where the hell are we going this weekend? I'm on to Texas Tech. So I'm not there on Friday. We obviously have 2 little kids, 7-year-old, 5-year-old. They want to trick-or-treat. Trick-or-treating hours were from 4 to 5 to 7 in our neighborhood and our community. So naturally, my husband takes the girls out, go meets up with another dad. They just do the loop of the neighborhood. So we do the thing, the only real thing you can do when you got kiddos who want to trick-or-treat during trick-or-treating hours. You put a bowl out on the front porch with a little note that says, take one, happy Halloween, or something along those lines. You know, I'm not saying it has to be that exact verbiage, but something along those lines. We have a Ring doorbell, as many people do in the year 2025. The number of buzzes I got while I was in
Utah.
Utah, thank you.
I don't know where in Utah. I just know in Utah.
Salt Lake City.
Okay.
We're in Salt Lake City.
All right.
That night was awesome, right? You're getting the buzz. Somebody's at the door. They're grabbing the candy. But that also means that we have video evidence of every single trick-or-treater who stopped by the house. And there's one video. 4 or 5 kids. I guess ages 10, 9, 10. Bunch of boys. And they are just going to town, okay? Handful upon handful upon handful until both bowls, because we had 2 bowls out there just in case we couldn't cover it with just the one, empty. And that was that. And that was about, 6 o'clock, and there was an hour left of trick-or-treating.
Sounds about right.
Every other child that came up to the door and saw the empty bowl, it was a little bit sad watching on the video of them realizing that the bowls had been empty.
Should have got there sooner.
Yeah. What's the early bird?
They get the worm.
Gets the worm, yeah. Should I do anything with that video evidence, Chew, or do we just let it go?
No, your problem was you put the sign up. Kids don't like to be told what to do in situations like that. I did the same thing.
Kids.
I did the same thing. No sign, just a heaped over bowl, and I had 3/4 of the bowl still there, which I was disappointed because then I just throw it away.
Yeah, but, I mean, you live where all the old people live. Are there any children that live in Florida?
No, there's...
Well, emotionally.
There were a lot of kids. I would probably say 30 kids, maybe more. They were very good.
30 kids
is one bag
of candy. I couldn't
believe there was 3/4 of the bowl left. But I wouldn't have put the sign up, Jen.
Really?
Whoa. Did you have good candy? Did you have bad candy?
You know, I had the Butterfingers, the Snickers, the Twix.
All right, because you reek of somebody who would go cheap on the Halloween candy and overflow the bowl.
No, but you know what I heard down here, which is insane to me? Crazy. People put out ramen noodles and the kids were destroying it.
What do you mean putting out ramen noodles? You mean they're handing out ramen noodles?
In a bowl, just like I had. There would be packets of ramen noodles, and they said the kids love ramen noodles. I don't know if that's down here or everywhere, but I knew people that put out ramen noodles, and the kids loved it.
I don't know of anybody who truly loves ramen noodles.
Oh, my kids love
have
ramen noodles.
Have we all consumed it? Yeah, but would they rather have that or the Snickers?
Well, the thing is that they got like 23 Snickers.
Sure.
So the one ramen pack to the 23 Snickers, I think they'd take a ramen pack. I'm actually thinking
kind of a supply and demand type thing.
Should I implement the ramen noodle suggestion for next Halloween? The cup of noodles, is that what it is? Is it a cup of noodles or is it the package of the flat noodles?
The flat noodles.
Yeah, just that plastic container.
Yeah, you're good to go. Those are the best. I know we didn't grow up in bougie Horicon, but you know what? In Deerfield, Massachusetts, we love that stuff.
Yeah, nobody actually loved it. We all ate it.
Has anyone ever called Horicon bougie before?
Yeah, no.
In the history of the world.
So you love it, Chew. When's the last time you had it?
Horicon or ramen?
Ramen. Out of the packet.
It's been inside of a year. Inside of a year.
I call
See, here's
BS.
What I do.
It's probably been 5 years and he hasn't realized it.
Here's the problem. When I travel and, Jen, when you get home late at night and there's nothing to eat in the house that you can make quick.
Yeah.
You keep a couple ramen noodles before you go to bed. Maybe it's 11 o'clock. You get home, throw that full belly. You sleep like a king.
See, my kids will ask for ramen noodles for dinner some nights. Can we have ramen noodles? Can we have ramen noodles? I'm like, I made chicken and rice. Like, no, you can't have bleeping ramen noodles. And then they're disappointed. They like look at me like, aw. So again, I think this might be something. I think that the ramen noodle packet might be a fun little. So no repercussions, no ramifications for the kids. And again, I wasn't going to do anything, but I did show my girls the video. I go, look at these crazy pants, and then, they are heaping this candy into their bag.
What would you expect?
One of the kids goes, careful, they have a Ring doorbell. They have a Ring doorbell. Be careful.
Yeah, but they know by now that nobody's going to do anything with that. What are you going to tattletale on the kids? As a 40-something-year-old woman, you're going to tattletale on children?
I don't know. Throw it up on the stream. Here's the thing. I am glad that they ate all of our candy because we would have found ourselves in a position like Chew where we have leftover candy. I think it's better to have, at the end of Halloween, to be out of candy than to have leftover candy you got to figure out what to do with.
Do you put restrictor plates on your kids with their bag of candy?
What do you mean restrictor plates?
One a day, two a day, instead of housing the whole bag.
So we have a rule on Halloween. You eat as much candy as you want. That's the one day. You go to town, right? But like yesterday, they've still obviously got a pretty substantial portion of their bag left. And at 6 o'clock, probably fine. 7 o'clock, gets a little creep. We're creeping towards bedtime. The closer we are to bedtime, we got to say no on the candy. So is that a restrictor plate?
Yeah, that's a form of it. Like my parents were only let us have like three pieces.
Ever?
They wouldn't let us house it one day, which you wanted to. Well, there was a cavity problem in our house, so that probably had something to do with it.
Isn't the real restrictor plate just mom and dad stealing it when the kids go to bed?
It's called taxing. It's called taxes, Josh.
Parent
that is called
tax.
That is called the Halloween tax that parents are taking out of the kids. Yes.
So here's the thing. It sounds like y'all are just resigned to, this is fine, this is how it is now. Like, if you leave
what
a
do you
bowl
mean
of
now?
Candy.
That's the way it's always been.
Really?
Yes. If you leave a bowl of candy and you put your little sign, take time, take one, you're wasting your time. Yeah. If you want to get upset because children are going to go hog wild when there's free candy sitting in front of them and no supervision, that's on you. We got 50 years of data saying kids are going to take handfuls instead of one.
Well, again, even if you take a handful, emptying the bowl felt a little egregious. Emptying the bowl's felt a little extreme. And again, we're not doing anything about it. It's not like, again, did I send you guys the video? Did I say, Joshy, throw this up on the stream? I want to really shame these 10-year-olds in my neighborhood. No. But there is a part of me that feels like that's what we're doing. We're emptying bowls.
Yes.
I'm a little surprised by this.
How are you surprised? You've got a child who's 7.
They would never. They would never go up to a house and empty the bowls into their bags.
Wait till they're 10. Wait till they're 10 and they go trick-or-treating without you.
I'm sure Chase and his buddies in the day.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Dollars to donuts.
So yeah. I'm just
whatever I'm you want to put down.
Very naive here is what you're
saying. I feel very confident in Chase emptying a bowl at some point in his life.
Here's the thing. You're right. It shouldn't be happening, and it's wrong. But when you get kids together, when you get the rave of candy and everybody losing their minds, it's just going to happen. It's sad we've had to accept it, but that's just the reality. Your bowl is always, 100% of the time, is going to be emptied. And it's not going to be one piece or two pieces at a time.
But the thing is, they were the only ones. Now, again, you could make the argument, well, yeah, they emptied the bowl. They didn't give anybody else an opportunity to do it. Everybody else, and again, I told you, we had like 30 or 40 blings on the Ring camera, went up there, took a couple, walked. And, you know, it was like, oh, this is going very well. Until you get that one group. Yep. It just was like.
Yeah, it only takes one.
I'm guessing the age is between 10 and 12. There's probably, what, 5 to 7 of them?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they go to town.
What's one of the equivalent?
They're there without their parents.
Yeah. What's the equivalent for parents, though? Because parents do stupid stuff sometimes, too. What's the equivalent? Of like, really?
Well, like when you're at Costco and they get a free sample and they take multiple free samples.
When they go there to eat lunch, drives me nuts. I mean, it just bothers me so much. God.
Is that the equivalent, though? Are we close?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably right. That's a good call.
Yeah. Oh, hey. Oh, that pizza. That pizza's pretty good. Oh, give me another one. I'm kind of hungry today. I'll take a third.
Do you loop back around or do you just camp out? Because the camping out is no shame.
I was about to say, the question is there, do you have any shame or not?
No, what they do is they don't buy anything. They just leave the store.
Well, I don't think you have to buy. Like a Costco, you don't have to buy anything.
Yes, you do.
Well, Costco, you're already paying to enter the store.
Objection, Your Honor. Objection. Sorry, the judge actually does the gavel.
Yes.
No one ever leaves Costco without buying something. That's never happened in the history
of
the
world. Right, you're usually there for a reason because
of the
hassle.
You buy something. Even if you went in just for samples, ooh, $20 for 4 toothpaste? Absolutely, I need 4 toothpaste.
Yeah, but I've been behind people that their cart has like 2 things in it, and I'm like, you're coming to Costco for that?
Now really? That I have
you're gonna
seen.
You're going to fight all these people, and you're coming to Costco for that.
I guess I'm not paying enough attention to other people.
Oh, I got time.
Well, yeah, but like even if you were to enter Costco just for a sample and leave Costco, like you're already paying a membership. You're paying to enter the premises.
How about the sample at the meat counter? That drives me nuts too. No,
sample
I don't like that
at the meat counter? Your meat counter is giving out samples?
Yeah.
Yeah, like if you want one of the particular meats, somebody will ask for a sample before getting a pound of it.
Angie does that.
Oh, you mean like lunch meat?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay,
because
I was picturing steak.
Yeah. Oh,
understood.
Ooh,
no.
Teriyaki.
Angie does that.
How are you enjoying your raw meat at the deli counter?
It usually happens when people ask for like specific or like super thin, and then they'll hand it over and like, is that thin enough? And the person will eat it and say yes. Yeah.
Or Angie does that with beer, and it drives me up a wall. There should be a limit. Two sample beers, and that's it. Not 5.
Oh, when you go to a brewery.
I say 0. You're an adult.
Not even a brewery, Gabe. Like a
just getting a High Life out of the tap?
No. You know, when they have the bougie beers with the taps and things like that.
Where are they giving out free booze?
Well, they'll give you a tiny little, like,
if you go to, like, a brewery, right? Like, I know our friends at Broken Bat will do this because they change the taps. They have new seasonal stuff. They've just got a little, you want to give a sample before you buy the whole 12 ounce of it. So they'll just give you maybe just a little sip so you get a taste so you know if you like it before you go with the
whole pint. I think I told you guys that story. One of the last times I was in Utah, I went to a local brewery. They gave me a beer. It was horrible. I was like, I don't want this. Take it back. And they were like, sorry, we have to charge you for the beer. And you were like, pay for the beer, Jen.
Yeah.
Just pay for the beer.
You pay for the
beer.
Exactly.
800-990-3776.
We're all adults. Grow up.
76.
Live with your choices.
Reaction rolling in on the Halloween stuff. I love this. This guy said, a guy in my sister's neighborhood was grilling out in his driveway, handing out hot dogs for Halloween. Best idea ever. That from Billy in Sussex. John in the 262 says, I live in Oconomowoc. We've left a bowl out for years. It is never emptied, which is super nice. I appreciate that there are kids out there who are not emptying the bowls. Ben says you should upload that video to Mequon Mom's Facebook group. No, again, I don't want to really put them on blast like I just wondered if, like, you guys, it sounds like y'all have come around to this. You sort of have accepted this as this is just how it is now. Which, again, I'm not sure how I feel about that.
It's not just how it is now. It's how it's always been.
You sound like somebody who might have done this game.
Of course! I have. Chewy has. Josh has. I guarantee it.
I was the cop of the neighborhood. I've never done that.
Bull honky.
I don't know if I was ever unsupervised as a, because I always had younger relatives with me.
Okay.
And by the time I was old enough to go with just my friends, we didn't go anymore. So it was just sort of, I don't think I've ever done it.
Yeah, because you have to be unsupervised by your parents in order to do it.
I certainly witnessed it, and we just kind of watched the kids do it, and we're like, well, I would have liked a Twix there, but so it goes. The older kids got it. What am I going to do?
Augie from Fredonia says, ramen is a favorite everywhere. In our group with 8 kids, 6 chose the ramen noodles over a candy bar at multiple houses.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I am loving this. You know, the people who used to think outside the box were like the people who handed out toothbrushes and applesauce. And you were like, cool, thanks. But ramen noodles.
Ramen's probably cheaper than the candy.
This is a thing. My kid came home with 3 packs of ramen this year. Finding houses with ramen is the highlight of the entire group's night. That from Josh in the 325. We got to take a break here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Got to get to Jason Wilde. Really interesting perspective there on the old ramen noodles. I think we should throw it on the Jen, Gabe, and Chewy Infinity Exteriors poll as well. Would you like to get ramen noodles for Halloween at a house? Let us know, 800-990-3776.
Cheez-It, the legendary snack cracker. It's now available as a frozen pizza. Each crust, a giant original Cheez-It flavor cracker that's square-shaped, of course. That's what the crust has to be. Cheez-Its are square. And then it's ultra-thin. It's super crispy, a perfect amount of Cheez-It flavor. And then, again, because Palermo's makes this, on top, you're going to have those flavors with the toppings that you know you're going to love, including Italian 4 cheese, cheddar jack supreme, and pepperoni. It's got one of the shortest bake times as well, so you go from freezing to cheesing in as few as 8 minutes. Find Cheez-It frozen pizza in your favorite grocer's frozen pizza section.
Ready, down, put.
All Packers, all the time.
He was a field-tilting player, and the reason why Gabe and many others are so concerned is that this guy's on the field. He changes the offensive dynamic. They are a different offense when he is there.
Okay, most of the time.
You know, Homer calls Matt LaFleur soft all the time. Matt LaFleur is like Vince Lombardi compared to me.
It's Jason Wilde on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Jason Wilde is brought to you by Lakeland Supply. Lakeland Supply is in business to make your business better. Set up a free packaging and supply chain assessment at lakelandsupply.com. Exterior Pros, ready to tackle your home improvement project this year? Exterior Pros. Pros and Baths is here to help you score big with quality home exterior and shower upgrades. Visit extpros.com. Also brought to you by Century Foods. Change your grocery game plan to locally owned Century Foods, home of the best meat, freshest produce, and tastiest treats.
We love getting insight from our friend and teammate Jason Wilde here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Good morning, Jason. How you doing?
I'm good, everybody. How are you?
Good. Well, I've been better. Tucker Kraft, the injury confirmed yesterday. He will, in fact, be out for an extended period of time with the ACL injury. What do you think the team's plan is on replacing him? You think it's just a step up from the guys who are already in that tight ends room?
Jeff Thomason.
I got his number.
JT, the flying T. Yeah. Mike Bartram. I mean, here's what's funny. I mean, not funny, haha, just funny, like weird. Like, so they continue to keep Gabe's guy, Lucas Havrisik, on the roster. Yesterday they cut Christian Welch, kept Lucas Havrisik on the roster. A week ago, to make room for Christian Watson, they cut Ben Sims, their number 4 tight end. Chipotle Ben, as Tosh likes to call him, because I was allegedly stalking him at a Chipotle. And the team's claimed him. So he's not available. And there's a guy that's been in your system as long as Kraft and Musgrave have been, and quite frankly, if you could put Ben Sims' ability to block and play special teams into Luke Musgrave's body with his athleticism, you'd have another Tucker Kraft. And now you don't have Tucker Kraft, nor do you have the two guys who could recreate him in the aggregate. So right now you've got two tight ends on the roster. They've got another guy on the practice squad, but they're a little thin there. So trade deadline today at 3 p.m. I'm very curious to see if Goody does something to augment that position.
Jason, do you get any inkling that LaFleur may hand over the play-calling ability? And if so, does anyone on the roster other than Getsy have play-calling experience?
No, I don't get that inkling at all. And on top of that, you know, Steno has called some preseason games. I like Luke Getsy a lot. And he obviously called plays for two franchises that were dysfunctional, to say the least, with the Bears and the Raiders. But I don't, like, change for change's sake always makes me a little nervous. And I don't see a play-calling upgrade coming from anybody that's on their coaching staff. So, I mean, I don't know what other options they would have beyond that. Like Nathaniel Hackett, like I think he's like working remotely and just helping on the defensive side, like Sala did on the offensive side. So it's not like you're gonna bring him on board and have him call plays, because that didn't go very well either. So do you think he? Are you asking because you think he should give up play calling?
No, the only reason I say that is because I just saw that Stefanski gave up his play calling duties in Cleveland, and wasn't there another coach this year that gave it up? And he's taken a little heat, Jason. And I always talk about bread and butter. I don't see bread and butter with this team. And where I think and I'm not the only one. I heard it yesterday. They think he gets a little too cute in his play calling. Where Holmgren got cute was formationally. We called the same stuff, but we always changed up the way we did it formationally. And I just think that's a better way to do it. You have a play, and then you have four plays off of that play. I just don't see that with him. I don't see a flaw.
Yeah, I think –
Do we lose Jason?
Seems like we've lost Jason.
Or he's speechless.
Well, listen, as you mentioned that, Joshy, can you pull up that sound from Dan Orlovsky and Mina Kimes yesterday from NFL Live? Because, Chu, you are not the only one who sees that the scheming is a little bit different than what you're used to. Take a listen to this.
I feel like when I watch the Packers offense, it's almost like this obsession with creation. We will out-create or out-scheme things for us, rather than sometimes it's okay to line up and play. Like, do you feel that way sometimes
when
I watch them?
Take a profit.
Yeah.
They should be more efficient than they are. But your point about the line of scrimmage is really important, because that was a discrepancy between these teams. I mean, the Panthers, who are missing players on their offensive line, just dominated them at the line of scrimmage. And then with Green Bay, you go 1-for-5 in the red zone. Look, going back and rewatching, so many self-inflicted errors, Dan.
Yeah.
The fumble. Penalty totally. Holding, false start, and then a missed field goal.
I just feel like there's a fine line between, man, we love some of the designs that they get to and some of the schemes they get to,
right.
And then are you every single play trying to out-scheme the defense in some very unique way? I don't know. There's just a lack of execution on some of the overly exotic plays that stand out to me.
Sounds like he's saying keep it simple, stupid. Jason, are you back with us?
I am. I didn't know if you were talking to me.
Oh, yeah. So Dan Orlovsky, it sounds like he and Chewy are in alignment.
Yeah. I mean, look, their execution was poor on a number of levels. Their offensive line, they have not, their reconfiguration of that has not worked out. I think Elgton Jenkins has struggled. I think he's playing better, but you know, there's free runners way too frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Say what you want about Josh Myers, but he always made sure the protection calls were on point, and you didn't see that kind of stuff because he played center his entire life. Same with Corey Linsley and Scott Wells. So, you know, I think that's part of it. Mina mentioned the self-inflicted wounds. the fumble. Do I think that LaFleur gets too cute? I don't believe that. Like, I look at what they're running. I think that they are flummoxed by this idea that they're going to be forced to go 8, 9, 10, 11 plays and drive the field. He wants to get explosives. He's got a quarterback who loves to sling it down the field even when he shouldn't. And so I think he's, you know, I noticed they run a lot of horizontal stuff, right? They side to side instead of forward. And whether it's jet sweeps or the bubble screens, I mean, their execution on those was horrendous, right? That's what leads to the fumble, for one. Like, if you're going to run that, your guys better block it up. And I think one of them was with Malik Heath, who's their best blocker,
mm-hmm.
who didn't get his block executed. So, you know, when you lose a game like that, everything is under the microscope. I would argue that if I have an issue with his play calling, it's that he's indecisive. And he always says about quarterback play, indecisive equals ineffective. But, like, on the really big gotta-have-it decisions, if you're going to go for it on 4th and 8, you better have a pretty good play call that you feel really good about from the 13-yard line. And he admitted the play before it was 3rd and 3, and he's thinking even if it's 4th down, they're going to go, but he wasn't ready for it to be 4th and 8. So then he makes the play call, then he pops the timeout, and then they run the same play anyway, and it didn't work. Now, if you look at it, it was not well, again, not well executed. But I just don't see his play calling. I know everybody's frustrated. I get it. I just don't see his play calling as the root of their issues or the design of the offense. You score 13 points, you're going to get criticized. You struggle in the red zone, you're going to get criticized, and deservedly so. But I don't think it's time to, you know, suddenly hand the play calling duties over to, you know, Connor Lewis or something.
If they wanted to move Elton back to left guard, do they have somebody who they could put in at center?
I mean, look, Jacob Monk is a center. We know he was not very good at guard in the preseason. So he would be an option for sure. I don't know if Sean Ryan would be any better. I don't know if they have better options. I mean, they predicated their reconfiguration of that line on moving Elton and paying Aaron Banks, who seemingly cannot finish a game, a king's ransom. Now, his contract, they could get out of it after a year if they were to decide to do that. But right now, I mean, I'm looking at them thinking a year from now, they're going to have a completely different offensive line, right? They're not going to pay Rasheed Walker. They're not going to pay Sean Ryan. I don't think, based on the way he's played, they're going to keep Elton Jenkins. And probably, but I wouldn't say certainly, will keep Aaron Banks. So,
is there a situation where they decide to move on from Banks and move Elton back to left guard and figure out a plan for 27 going forward without Elton Jenkins or something like it? Because Elton's too good of a player for him to be like this. I feel, and especially because left guard hasn't been solidified, whether it's because of the injuries, whether it's because Aaron Banks has just frankly hasn't played that well either.
Yeah, the one thing they can't do, I don't think, because of their cap situation, is keep Elton at the number that he's at. So if they have options, if they were to decide to move him back and say this didn't work, you know, get a guy to play center, fine. But I don't think he can be on the roster next year at the number he's supposed to be at. Like, they either have to extend him or move on from him because I just don't think that that's tenable for them with all the other big contracts they have on their books.
Jason Wilde hanging out with Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Jason, before we let you go, I want to take a listen to what Matt LaFleur had to say yesterday about the kicking situation.
He didn't kick for two straight weeks. So, but that's a process working through. But we felt confident in terms of what we've been seeing out at practice and just his ability to make them, because that's where it all starts for us. I mean, and he's been doing a great job in practice. And unfortunately, you know, he missed the shorter of the. I know he had three kicks, but unfortunately, he missed the shorter one and hit the longer one.
So, according to Matt LaFleur, Brandon McManus is definitely working through some things health-wise, but they've gone with him the last two games because of what they've seen in practice. This, to me, is insanity, Jason. If you know a guy is definitely working through some health things, why not let him work through them to the end when you have somebody like Haversick available who can ostensibly kick successfully?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, if he's not 100%, why are you kicking him? You think he's good enough, but why are you keeping Lucas Haversick around? Like, it doesn't make sense to me. When I look at where they're at, I would have shut him down and said, look, it is injury related, not performance related. When you are fully 100% healthy, you're our guy. We paid you to be our guy. And while Lucas Haversick is a lovely flavor of the month, we don't want him kicking with a trip to the NFC Championship game on the line because we don't know if he can make it. We know you've done it. You've kicked in a Super Bowl. But this has been, in my opinion, bungled because not only do you now have McManus missing, you also have him looking over his shoulder, it would appear. I mean, I would defer to Chewy on this. Does that happen? The fact that Haversick is there, is that impacting his performance?
Part of it. I mean, no one wants to get Wally pipped, you know? I mean, to
that's
McManus's,
a position where you don't have that.
I mean, in his defense, I mean, it was pretty windy, right, Jason?
Yep.
He pulled it. That plays with your head. You know, it's hard for receivers to catch balls in winds because that thing moves. So,
but he also said, Chew, that he is definitely working through some health things.
Yeah. Then you probably play the other guy with the hopes that, you know, McManus, give him 3 weeks or whatever till he's 100% healthy and then move forward from there. Could they, Jason, what's a short IR? Is there a short IR or no? What's IR? How many
Four games?
Yep, so do four, that. Four do games. That. Then he's protected. Then you figure out the roster
should've
and let him kick in four games.
Should have done it 4 games ago.
Yes.
Right?
Totally agree.
Jason,
totally agree.
We appreciate you hanging out with us, man. Have a great one. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, everybody. Take care. Be good.
You can hear Jason Wilde on Wilde and Tausch right after Jen, Gabe, and Chewy each and every morning here on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. We'll take a break. Lots of stuff to still dive into, including a big Bucks win last night over the Pacers. Giannis with the game-winning shot at the end. We'll talk about that as the show rolls on right after this.
Fellas, listen up. If you're getting ready to take that next step in life and propose, the Jewelry Center has to be the first stop. Whether it's naturally mined or lab-grown diamonds, the Jewelry Center has options for it all. Maybe you don't know exactly what that ring for that special someone is going to look like. Well, go over to our Pinterest page. See if there's anything there. Bring it in. The helpful team at the Jewelry Center always going to help you out. Learn more about the engagement ring selection or any of the other services. Shop TJC.com or stop in today. In one of their three locations, Greenfield, Brookfield, or in Burlington. When you head over there, tell them that Gabe and Chew sent you.
It's Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
I'm right-handed, but I'm with Gabe here, yeah. I think more confident in my left hand here, just cupping right now, other than my other hand cupping.
Mostly because I also...
I get a lot more work out of the right hand.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, if you missed any of our conversation with Jason Wilde, of course you can find it on the all-new ESPN Wisconsin app. Wilde has his own little section there, his own little button there. If you want to hear everything Jason Wilde has to say about the green and gold, I highly recommend you check it out. So a lot of people have been talking about the Green Bay Packers after that epically disappointing, epically embarrassing loss to the Panthers. And Greg Olsen was one of them. So Greg Olsen, I believe, called the game. So he was right there, front row seat. To the Packers loss to the Panthers. Listen to what he has to say, his analysis of why the Packers are struggling right now.
Green Bay touched the ball 8 times, didn't punt, and scored 13 points. it's just they. I think they need to put the game more in Jordan Love's hands. They are a good passing offense going into that game. I had Jordan Love as a top five guy through the first half of the year. He was a top five quarterback in the league this season. And I think they need to let him do more. I think he's a really talented guy. I think he can sling it all over. I think they've got young, talented wide receivers. I agree. Tucker Kraft going down is just devastating.
Chewy, do you agree that they need to be giving Jordan Love the reins a little bit more here?
I mean, what's do more? He's throwing the ball. How many times do they throw the ball in the game?
37.
How many more times do you want to throw it? You know? You got an all-pro running back who played pretty darn well. I mean, Carolina outrushed him, but what do you want him to throw it 50 times and run the ball 15 times? I mean, it's proven it works, the percentages and how they do thing. It's just I have a problem schematically, and I wanted to talk to you guys. Like, look, this is how we did it in the red zone, okay? And a couple of the plays I saw were straight man, okay? We would always have a rub guy. I was the rub guy. So
yeah, you were.
I would be – if it was straight man, I was responsible – we didn't call it a pick. We called it a rub for setting a depth, for setting a depth where the receiver comes underneath me and rubs his guy off onto me. Okay, you got to be a good actor, which I was. And then you clear out that area so the receiver coming underneath catches the ball and is free. Okay, then if they play zone, everyone adjusts on the fly. Okay, there are plays where LaFleur or Holmgren would think it would be man, you get zone, and the other half of the receiving crew would run routes as if it was zone. And if it's man, it's me and the receiver, and he's responsible for rubbing his guy off to mine, and then he pops free. I don't see any of that. What it looked like to me is LaFleur thought it was going to be zone, turns out to be man, and these receivers, I don't want to say rarely, but half the times can't beat the defender because they're all twos and threes.
Yeah, I guess when I hear that, Chew, I don't think, oh, throw the ball, you know, more than 37 times. I'm looking at the 37 throws and thinking, oh, he's talking about throwing it differently. Because when you look at his pass chart, Chew,
yeah,
14 of the throws are at or behind the line of scrimmage. Like, yeah, those are passes, but that's kind of an extension of the run game, where you're hoping that some of these guys are going to be able to get a block, break a tackle, and do yards after the catch thing. Turns out, the only guy through the first half of the season who was good at yards after the catch is now the guy who's on IR in Tucker Kraft. Yeah. Like, he was the only one who is really adept at it and great at it. So they're trying to get the ball in the hands of Savion Williams, of, you know, Matthew Golden, but they're doing it behind the line of scrimmage. They're not blocking it well. So when I hear Greg Olsen say, hey, put the ball in Jordan Love's hands more, it's not, hey, throw the ball 50 times. It's, okay, if you're going to throw the ball 35 times, at least try to have him push the ball, I'm not saying all the way down the field, because the teams are playing you know, some shell, and they're preventing, making it more difficult to throw it deep down the field. I'm talking more, I mean, you've said the word slant how many times in the first 2 months of the season?
Know.
You know, more of those quicker routes that you're actually working down the field, or even more intermediate routes, and having more of that in the offense. That's what I, again, maybe I'm just projecting that onto Greg Olsen, but that's what I'm hearing when he says that, because 14 passes at or behind the line of scrimmage isn't good for anybody.
Yeah, go to. Remember Kraft's catch over the middle early in the game?
Mm-hmm.
Just a simple. That was one of my bread and butters, right? And that 56 couldn't cover a bed with a blanket when it comes to Tucker Kraft, okay? That's what I'm talking about, bread and butter plays. That's just what's called a simple basic cross. Tucker Kraft does it well. And that's like the first time I've seen it this year.
Okay, so for argument's sake, guys, I want you to take a listen to Dan Orlovsky. We already heard from him this morning when they were talking about the scheme with Mina Kimes. But listen to Dan Orlovsky, who was critical of Jordan Love's play in the game on Sunday. Maybe that's why Matt LaFleur doesn't feel comfortable doing these things that Greg Olsen is suggesting. Take a listen to this.
Yesterday's such an immature performance.
Thank you. Packers.
Let's just call it what it is. It's immature. Number one, if you guys have the clip, show the very first snap of the game for the Packers offense. Okay, very first snap of the game, he's going to have a tight end. You're calling the play to see if you can get the tight end crossing the field from his left to right. There's a little ball fake. The tight end's wide open. At worst, it's going to be a 40-yard gain. Jordan makes a play fake, moves out of the pocket unnecessarily. He's looking completely opposite side of the field. And my note is, where are your eyes?
Yeah, I think there's a part of it where LaFleur doesn't trust him at times. Look, you have to trust. And that's why I ask Jason a lot if he's a micromanager. Because we all know micromanagers. They try to control too much. That was the nice thing about Holmgren. He'd come off the field and say, what do you like? What do you like? You know why he would say, why do you like? Because he trusts you. He'd say it to Brett. You know, you can't play scared. How many times you heard me say that, Gabe?
1,000.
You can't play scared. Sometimes you just got to cut the guy loose.
So what would that look like? Let's talk about that for a minute, because if you want the Packers to take Greg Olsen's suggestion advice and put the ball in Love's hands, what would that look like schematically, Gabe?
Put the ball in Jordan Love's hands more. Again, I think it's more of those down the field routes. Jason even mentioned it, how it seems like they have so many things going horizontally, kind of going parallel with the line of scrimmage. And in that type of, you're asking more out of your wide receivers. You're not asking more out of your quarterback. You're asking more out of your wide receivers, that you're getting the chunk plays out of those guys. And while I think Matthew Golden has the potential to be a really good player in this league, he's not there yet. We kind of know what the other receivers are to this point. Like, even if you were to throw a screen behind the line of scrimmage to somebody like Christian Watson, who we all like, that's not his strength, right? Like, him getting yards after the catch and operating in space, that's not his strength. So putting the ball in Jordan Love's hands more is, hey, let's operate a little bit more down the field. I understand the offensive line hasn't played well. Maybe that factors into this, where they're a little worried about Jordan Love having to take a little bit more time to have a play like that develop. But putting the ball in Love's hands more, to me, means pushing it, again, not all the way down the field and just, you know, going straight Bruce Arians and chucking nine route after nine route. It's more about getting the ball beyond the line of scrimmage and doing things that way instead of around in those horizontal routes, asking your receivers to get yards after the catch constantly.
But, Jen, this is just a little thing, and I told the story a couple weeks ago. Why the hell is LaFleur in Jordan Love's ear? Why? I can tell you why. Because he doesn't trust anyone else. Because he's a micromanager. Andy Reid used to be in Brett's ear, and I'd sit there, and he'd be like, okay, we're going to run the 72X shell across. Okay, we're expecting cover two here. Tell Chu to be aware of two. Okay? Because he doesn't trust the guy, right? And you can do that. If he trusted him, then all he would worry about is calling plays. You have to trust the coaches to coach. And that was always my concern. Like, Andy Reid, Mooch, Morty Morton, all head coaches. They're none of this on this app. You know, Stinovich, sure. But is there really coaches that are like, that you absolutely trust to coach the position, to hand over authority in certain situations, and then just trust everyone? See, this is why I see it's tracking. He doesn't trust Jordan Love, doesn't trust his quarterback coach to be in the ear of Jordan Love when he can give him so much more information, because LaFleur's got to call the damn plays.
Chu, I know you probably don't like it, but I think that's just the way it's done now in the league. Well, when you hear other head coaches talk about, I know Mike McCarthy was just talking about it, because he does his weekly hit on the Pat McAfee show. They were talking about, like, the info that he gave Brett versus the info he gave Aaron when he was in their ear calling the plays for the Green Bay Packers. And obviously, Mike was the head coach and play caller. And he said that, you know, with Brett, you could talk to Brett all the way up to the 15-second mark when your mic would get cut off, because Brett wanted that information. Aaron didn't want that information. But I just think that the head coaches that are play callers, they just go directly to the quarterback. That's the way it's done now versus the way that you guys did it back in the 90s.
Yeah, I just think it's crazy, because calling plays is hard. You know, it's hard. And when you don't line up, you're in the red zone, right? You have, and I've said, 5 from the 5, 5 from the 10, 5 from the 15, 5 from the 20. 20 plays that you should be studying the night before the game, and you don't know where the hell to line up? You don't know what the 5 plays are from the 15, and you got to burn a timeout? That's just stupid. It's dumb. And it's frustrating.
Dan weighing in on the Carbless Talk and text line. He says, the last 6 weeks, Jordan Love is second in the league in throws behind the line of scrimmage 25% of the time. Got to take a break here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. If you went in on the autumn action at Pottawatomie Casino Hotel Milwaukee, well, we know that you do. $300,000 in prizes. So yeah, who wouldn't? Play November 1st through the 20th. Earn entries with your rewards card. Drawings are on Thursdays from 5 to 8 p.m. Thursdays, pick your win from a prize board. All leftover prizes go into a rollover jackpot drawing at 8:30 p.m. More information is available online. Must be 21 years old and a rewards member to play. Autumn action at Pottawatomie Casino Hotel, Milwaukee.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Thanks, Ernie. I'm going to Venmo you that money right after the show.
You can't. You don't know how to use Venmo.
Made my workload much less. But, Ernie.
You don't know how to.
Ernie,
do it, and I don't know
does
how to
it ever?
It, so it's,
yeah.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Great Midwest Bank is celebrating 90 years serving southeastern Wisconsin homeowners. It's true, 1935 to 2025, it's a long history of helping families right here in our community. And I've experienced it myself, not just with my mortgage for our home, but with everyday banking too. Checking, savings, 24/7 mobile banking, it's all so convenient. But it comes with a personal touch from real people who understand your real needs. That's why I trust Great Midwest Bank. Find a location at greatmidwestbank.com. That's Great Midwest Bank, your simply local equal housing lender and member FDIC. As we celebrate Hughes Day here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, Gabe, you just stumbled upon a really good little nugget.
Yeah, but so Ben Solak putting up his piece that he does after each NFL week over at ESPN.com apparently had a feeling that the Packers were getting pretty conservative and too cautious depending upon who they were playing. And, well, what he found kind of bore that out. So stick with me. It's a little bit, you know, again, convoluted. But so air yards per pass attempt by spread under Matt LaFleur. So he separated how much the air yards that the quarterback is throwing the ball down the field. When the Packers are favored by 7.5 or more, it's 6.5 yards, the average air yard. So they're not throwing the ball that much down the field, keeping it close to the line of scrimmage. Favored of 7 points or fewer, that jumps up over a full yard to 7.8. If they're an underdog, it's 8.5 of 7 points or fewer. And then when they're big underdogs, underdogs of 7.5 or more, they air it out with an average yards air yards per pass attempt at 9.8, which would be 2 yards higher than the league average. So based on that, yes, when the Packers are up or they're expected to be a dominant team like they were on Sunday, Matt LaFleur kind of goes, oh, we got to keep make sure we don't make those big mistakes down the field versus when they are underdogs. Again, I think of what they did in that first play against Detroit a couple of Thanksgivings ago, and they aired it out to Christian Watson deep. They're not afraid to throw the ball down the field. So I think they need to maybe adapt the mindset that they have when they're underdogs versus when they're favorites.
Does that data surprise you, Chew?
It means nothing to me. Absolutely nothing.
Really?
Because everything's at all levels. That's Jordan's decision-making, okay? You have a clear out. That's level one, right? And then you have your intermediates. That's level two. And then you have your checkdowns. So the read up, it always goes top to bottom, okay? It's always one, mid-level's two, checkdown is three. So it's not like all they're doing is running verticals. Those are all Jordan Love's decisions.
Yes.
He's deciding to air it out deep instead of go to level two or whatever for whatever reason.
Well, then the next inevitable question
to
is it the offensive line? Is it because this offensive line has been struggling so much with some of the movement and some of the, you know, repositioning of guys that they're not giving Jordan Love time to go through his progressions?
That's a possibility. And you know what? This was a top. I don't know where they're at now, but it was like, it was what, like 6 in points, Gabe, 7 in yards? So I don't want to crush him to death. And look, everyone, not everyone, but look at Buffalo had a stinker. They went into Atlanta and got the doors blown off them, right? All these good teams have, this is their stinker. But
that's on the road, Chew. Like, that's on the road. They're not 13.5 point favorites.
Gabe, this
like game, this is this is by far, again, it's the worst loss since the merger. Like, I don't want to downplay that. Like,
I
the
agree.
Merger. 1970.
Like at the end of the day, if they get the seventh seed, you're going to point to two games, right?
Yes.
You're going to point to two games that were a complete joke.
Correct.
That were a joke.
Like you can, the thing that bothers me again the most, and I said it yesterday, is that they refuse to learn the lesson from the Cleveland game. Refuse to learn
yeah.
it.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Refuse to learn I it agree. Because that's what, when you're a young team with Brian Gutekunst, oh, you experience things early, you apply them lessons late, then you're getting better. And they refuse to learn the lesson that happened against Cleveland because it was deja vu all over again, except it was at Lambeau Field against the Carolina Panthers, which, and again, it makes it all that worse to me because, oh, okay, so I can't trust this team. Like, they're best. The infuriating part, and I think the part where a lot of people, we've played some sound from Greg Olsen, we've played some sound from Dan Orlovsky, I think everybody's frustrated with this team because we've seen their best is as good as anybody's best in the league. The problem is they can't attain that level or even get close to that level on any sort of consistent basis. So even if they do win this division, am I trusting this team to win three games in high-pressure situations in a row in the postseason? Probably not.
And I'm with you, but I'm going to stick to my mantra of never get too high, never get too low. Because let's remember, when they won it in 2010, they didn't have JerMichael Finley.
Yeah, but you know who they did have?
I know.
Greg Jennings. I don't want to hear that either. Like, oh, well, because I saw everybody put that out on social media. Oh, well, back in 2010, they also were disappointing and they lost their tight end. They also had Greg Jennings and Jordy Nelson and James Jones and Donald Driver and guys
Rogers
that are all
guys.
Better. Yes.
Like they had a future Hall of Famer under center who could erase some of these mistakes, who could erase some of these issues that are showing up this year. And Jordan,
you know what
just
the worst thing, real
yet.
Quick, Jen, the worst thing about it? Is now we got to worry about going to play the Giants in New York, where that's like, that's a win. Now you got to worry about it. You shouldn't have to worry about it.
Yep, 100%.
With this team, you shouldn't have to worry about it. Now you got to worry about it.
A couple of other things that Solak mentions in his article on why aren't the Packers better, why aren't the Packers dominating teams like we thought they would. He said that he can, Gabe, to your point, excuse away the loss to the Browns, and he attributes it to still onboarding the Micah Parsons, right? It was still so early in the season. You're getting used to how he's going to affect your defensive scheme. So he says, I can excuse that as sort of a learning curve loss. But the best defense against a high-powered offense like the Packers is to keep it on the sidelines. This goes back to what we discussed yesterday. Matt LaFleur knew what the game plan was going to be for the Panthers. And even knowing it in advance, even saying this is how they are going to try to beat us, he couldn't counterintelligence his way out of it. And that is frustrating. And look, I'm not saying that Jordan Love is blameless in this thing. Because the more film that you watch, the more people who are breaking it down, they are saying... You heard the Orlovsky thing as far as where are his eyes? What is he seeing? Why isn't he seeing the whole field? Is he going through his progressions? Is the offensive line giving him an opportunity to go through his progressions? The problem is, guys, this might not be a singular problem. This might be multifaceted. And the problem with multifaceted issues is it's tough to fix them all in a week, between the Panthers game and the Eagles game on Monday Night Football. We got to take a break here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Still a lot of stuff to get to this morning, but yes, we are still recapping the Packers' loss to the Panthers, trying to figure out how much is on the coach, how much is on the players, how much can be fixed before they take the field again against the Eagles on Monday Night Football. Guys, this show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know BetterHelp because I talk about it pretty frequently, and I talk about it frequently because I believe in what they are trying to do. I've been doing therapy for about 15 years, and the difference in how I approach conflict and problems in my life is a galaxy from before I was doing therapy. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct. They are fully licensed in the United States, and they do this thing where you fill out a short questionnaire, and they help identify your needs and preferences and try to match you with someone who they think is going to be the best fit for you. And listen, they're pretty good at it, but in the off chance that they don't match you with somebody that you like, you can always switch therapists. Do you trust a 4.9 out of 5 rating on the App Store? That's 1.7 million client reviews. They can't be wrong. This month, don't wait to reach out. Whether you're checking in on a friend or you're reaching out to a therapist yourself, BetterHelp makes it easier to take that first step. Just call #250. That's #250. Say the keyword timeout. #250 and the keyword timeout for 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com.